Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and J.C. Abbott. Mr. Abbott, I want to check in and see if you know any lyrics, even one line, from any of 50 Cent's songs after his performance at BC Place.
We're going to party like it's your birthday. Go drink a party like it's your birthday. It's your birthday. That's about it. That's all I got.
I like how you just asked for a lyric and JC put on a performance.
That was awesome, man. Are you trying to resemble 50's energy from that night?
That was about as excited as 50 Cent got the whole time. He sat back. He enjoyed the dancers, grinded all over him, but did not raise his heartbeat much throughout that performance.
Let's get to it, boys. Today we're discussing Bo Levi Mitchell and Trevor Harris combining for almost 800 passing yards at the Donut Box in Week 2.
The BC Lions hosting a massive home opener crowd.
Darian Durant expressing regret for how he handled the end of his playing career.
Football Canada hiring a new executive director.
And we make our picks straight up and against the spread for Week 3 in the CFL. But first,
Hodge, those Winnipeg Blue Bombers placed ninth in our power rankings at Three Down Nation after falling to 0-2 in Ottawa, though the Bombers are ranked dead last in other power rankings across the country and garnered a number 9 ranking from at least one of our contributors. You have a front row seat to this team in the peg. Why have the Bombers struggled badly out of the gate, and do you think the blue and gold will be able to turn it around?
Just a quick clarification. They're 7th in our power rankings right now, but they are 9th in other publications' power rankings. And look, this team was awful week 1 against the Montreal Alouettes. I do think week 2, they have some legitimate excuses for what went down. Obviously, the weather made it tough on both offenses and defensively. I mean, this team lost 3 defensive starters to injury in the first half, 2 of whom play along the defensive line, 1 of whom went out on the first series. So when CFL roster sizes are what they are, right? We all know they're limited. It's really tough when you've got that type of loss right early on. I'll also say this, defensively, my favorite stat to analyze, at least among the stats the CFL publishes, to analyze defenses is offensive yards allowed per play. If you just look at the total offense allowed or total opponent net offense, the raw numbers don't mean anything right now because most teams have played 2 games, but a couple have only played 1. And when you average it out, even, you're still not taking into account how many plays teams were on the field for. So Winnipeg's defense has been on the field a lot because their offense has been terrible. They're only allowing 6.01 yards per play right now. That is 2nd best in the CFL. So I don't want to hear anybody talking about how this defense is washed. Tyrell Ford had a miserable game in week 1, allowing Tyson Philpott to score 2 touchdowns. He was brilliant last week against Ottawa. He was PFF's highest graded defensive back on any team for week 2. That being said, this team's special teams have been terrible, and this team's offense has been terrible. On punt returns, this team is averaging 5.7 yards. That is last in the league. And their opponents are returning punts for an average of 16.5 yards. This team is essentially giving up 10 yards every time they exchange punts with opposition, which is obviously not sustainable when your offense can't move the ball. And offensively, yes, there are injuries as well. Dalton Schoen's a little bit nicked up. Brady Oliveira didn't play. Kenny Lawler's out long term. The offensive line's got to be better. And first and foremost, Zach Collaros has to be better. I know that Zach hasn't gotten as much help as maybe he deserves, but at the end of the day, we do not judge Zach Collaros based on what an average quarterback might be able to do. Zach Collaros is a Hall of Fame quarterback. He is a two-time MOP. I'm with Dunk. He should have been the MOP last year. This is a guy who needs to step it up. Zero touchdowns, three interceptions through two games. I don't care what else is going on. Is not good enough. And the supporting cast, yes, is not as strong as it has been. I thought some of Buck Pierce's play calling was a little bit strange last week. But to me, he is the number one thing that has to be better in Bomberland, because a great quarterback can erase a lot of other issues on a team, on a roster. And right now, Zach Collaros is not only not erasing the problems, he's arguably making more with a couple of the bad throws that he's made.
Right now, this just feels to me like it's a team in transition, sort of stuck in the middle. For a number of years, we've talked about the Bombers and their aging group of veterans and how at some point they were going to have to get younger. And it seems like they've tried to begin that process this year. I think week one, they had, 12 new players on the roster, Hodge? That was double what they had the previous season. So clearly they're making strides in that direction, but with that comes growing pains. And I think you've seen that from a number of the young players on the Bombers roster. I think specifically that has showed up most in the receiving core and on special teams, as you mentioned, Hodge, right? And it's not just young players either. It's young coaches, because we have a transition here where Mike Miller is taking over as the special teams coordinator just 1 year after he was a player, and a fantastic player at that. But this was a special teams unit that declined over the course of last season and now has a newbie coach at the helm. There is going to be some lessons that have to be learned before that unit fires on all cylinder. And first among them is you got to learn who your returner is, because right now Myron Mitchell is not doing a good enough job at that spot. It's nothing against him. I don't think it's a role he's well suited to. It's certainly not one he's done in the past, even in college. So hopefully Chris Smith being back on the roster, the preseason sensation, hopefully being healthy enough to play, if not this game, but in the near future, will help that unit. But you also need guys to step up in the receiving core, where they've had a number of rookies cycle through. Carrick Weekfall had that one big catch for the team, but Ontario Wilson hasn't really popped in the last couple of games. Nobody has really cemented themselves as a guy that can fill the void for Kenny Lawler right now. And once you let a veteran like Rashid Bailey walk in free agency, that puts you in a difficult spot when you're relying on first-year players who have never played the CFL game before. Same thing on the offensive line, where you've got a guy in Liam Dobson who's making the first few starts of his career at guard, certainly a highly touted prospect, a guy I believe in. But it's going to take some time for that unit to mesh. So I'm not hitting the panic button on Winnipeg right now. I think a lot of their problems can be solved with chemistry and with patience. But certainly this is not the same dominant team that we've seen in the past.
I don't think that this is a massive surprise. The Bombers have started the season 0-2 for one reason, Hodge. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but in the last couple of years, it's not exactly like the Bombers have got off to a rip-roaring start. You know, I can remember Jeremiah Masoli's first start when he was in Ottawa, and that game came down to the wire, and the Red Blacks probably played better in that one. I believe that was the home opener in 2022, if I got my seasons right.
I believe
and then even
correct.
Last year, I don't think this team, you know, was clicking on all cylinders like we saw them at the middle part and even end of the season. So the slow starts to me are nothing new. It's just the fact that the Bombers were able to get wins, even though they played their C game, let's say, to start the last couple of seasons. But this season, they haven't been able to find those plays late in the ball game to put it together. I think that's the main reason that they're 0-2. Zach Collaros, yes, needs to play better, but I also think he's been close on some throws or just been a little bit off target. So it's not as bad as it might look, but certainly there's a lot of pressure on this team to get a win at home against the BC Lions in week three.
There is. Now, last season, this team did have double-digit wins to start the year against Hamilton, a game where Bolivar Mitchell played terribly. But they also got blown out in week three at home by the BC Lions. Speaking of, this week, week three, they're at home to the BC Lions. If they win this game, I think a lot of people change their narrative about Winnipeg. I will say, obviously, full credit to Damon Webb, who made an incredible play. He was our defensive player of the week here at Three Down Nation for the Ottawa Redblacks, knocking away a would-be touchdown to Dalton Schoen at the last minute. But if that pass to Dalton Schoen does get completed, we're not sitting here having a talk about how the Bombers are washed. We're talking about, wow, look how this KG veteran team fought through even more adversity to get the win and bounce back from a disappointing week one performance. I will also say some of the discourse online has become clown level with people saying, well, I was the only one who predicted that Winnipeg was going to suck this year. And then you actually look back at what they said or what they wrote or what they published, and they're like, Winnipeg might only finish second in the West Division. And it's like, oh yeah, that's definitely the same thing as sucking. I picked Winnipeg to go 12-6, which is under their projected win total, as we discussed on this show. Maybe I should take credit and say, see, I saw this coming. They were going to suck. I said that. It's like, no, you didn't. Come on. But regardless, this is a must-win game for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers this week. They're going to be in tough. Again, they've already placed two of their defensive starters on that line of scrimmage on the six-game injured list in Miles Fox and Celestin Haba. They are bruised. They are battered. They are beaten down. And this is a great opportunity for the team to come out swinging. JC, you mentioned Chris Smith potentially bringing some energy to that return game. This team needs to go out there and get that win, not only to bring BC down to 1-2, which would put them even in the standings, but to gain that confidence back and gain that swagger back. Because after this, I mean, they go to Calgary, they've got Ottawa, they've got Calgary again. The schedule to me is lightening up a little bit. You know, this team could easily be 3-3 or 4-2 at the third mark of the season, but it's got to start happening. They can't go out there and lose another game. The BC Lions hosted the largest crowd they've ever had for a regular season opener, announcing a sellout of 53,788 as 50 Cent performed before the game, though it seems like JC didn't like the performance. The crowd noticeably thinned as the game progressed, however, leading some detractors to criticize the concert as an unsustainable or artificial way to boost attendance. JC, do you think they have a point?
I think they have a point in the sense that, of course, it's an artificial way to boost attendance. That's the whole point. Does that mean that it's a bad way to boost attendance? I think people who think that are completely out to lunch. Two things can be true here. Thing number one, the Lions did a tremendous job marketing this game to get a sellout crowd into BC Place. We haven't been up at the 50,000 fan mark in that stadium since 2011 when the Reno finished and they came back into the building. This was a tremendous accomplishment by the club, more than a decade to get it filled up like they did. So kudos to them. And there is always going to be benefits for that long term, right? If you can get an extra 20,000 people in a building who weren't in there before, even if 2,000 of them, 5,000 of them take interest in your sport that they didn't have before, I think it's a success. So nobody should be criticizing the Lions for getting 53,000 people in their building. But the reality is, by the end of that game, and this was a one-score football game, a tight-fought football game in the fourth quarter, only about three-fifths of that crowd was left, right? There was noticeable attrition, people leaving in a football game that was tight. Now, admittedly, it was not a particularly exciting or well-played football game. The Lions came out flat. I think that hurt things. But this wasn't a football crowd, and that's what people were noting online, that a lot of those people who came to watch 50 Cent didn't stay for the duration.
That doesn't matter, though. That's the type of crowd that the BC Lions need to get in the building and that the CFL needs to get in the building. I don't want to hear any more of this discourse. I don't care when the people left. The fact that they were at least subjected to a little bit of CFL football and what the atmosphere could be like around a CFL game is a massive win, not only for Amar Doman and the Lions, but for the Canadian Football League.
I absolutely agree with you, Dunk. However, I do think there is one valid criticism, and that is an atmosphere critique. And that's the fact that we had nearly 54,000 people in that building, and it did not feel like 54,000. Now, this is something that has happened with the Lions season openers in the past when we've had those 35,000 fan
crowds.
That's okay.
The people will learn, man. They're new CFL fans.
They're subdued. And they need a lot of direction, right, to get them up. Now, I think the Lions failed in their approach in the sense that the team on the field did not deliver immediately, which caused that energy to fade, and they never recaptured it. But at field level, it doesn't sound like there was 54,000 people in the building. It never had an impact on the game. So I think for football fans, that's disappointing. But that doesn't change the fact that this is a success for the team off the field to potentially get even a few more fans coming in the future, right? The two things can be true simultaneously, and it's okay to say, hey, that crowd wasn't as powerful as it could have been, but at the same time, you've got to praise the Lions for doing an event of this nature.
You've got to praise the Lions for everything they did. And I like Amar Doman for literally, since he's bought this team, living out a rap lyric from 50 Cent. I'm going to shine till my heart don't stop. This man wants the BC Lions to shine, wants the Canadian Football League to shine, and he's putting his money where his mouth is. I don't want to hear any of this negative blowback about this, because for the CFL to grow, new fans need to come and be exposed to the game in any way possible. I don't care if these people left at halftime. I don't care if they left right after the concert. At least they were in the building. At least they got there on a game day to experience the atmosphere. And perhaps they'll think to themselves, hey, you know, that was kind of cool. And maybe 50 Cent won't be playing every single time in the pregame concert. But if we're down around the downtown Vancouver area, perhaps we'll stop in to catch a little bit of the game, because there's very affordable tickets that can be had out there in BC and affordable concessions, thanks to Amar Doman. So I don't want to hear it from anybody else. The other thing that this buys is a lot of media attention that otherwise never would have been there for the BC Lions home opener. That is the value that Amar Doman sees, and also the down the line value. So full credit to Amar Doman, full credit for the BC Lions for getting 50 Cent in there and creating an excitement around a football game, because ultimately to draw in the non-hardcore football fan, and that's what this league needs more of, especially the younger fans, this was a great thing that happened. So let's just enjoy it and hope that more of this continues, not just in BC, but across the league, for the league's long-term benefit.
Since you've both shared your favorite 50 lyric, I'm going to share my favorite 50 lyric. And it's in the song 21 Questions. And he's telling his girl, I love you like a fat kid loves cake. And I listened to that as a fat child back when it came out in the very early 2000s. And I related to it because I loved cake. So that's my favorite lyric. I just wanted that on the record.
Loved cake or love cake?
Yes, both. Still with cake. Who doesn't like cake? Come on. Who doesn't like cake?
I mean, Donk probably isn't digging into a bunch of birthday cake every day.
Well, we need 50
Give
cents.
Me a gluten-free cake and I might.
Oh,
we need 50 Cent to play at a cake shop, and that'll get Dunk in the door trying different cakes. opening up to a brand new world.
Oh, I do know another 50 in candy shop, but don't you stop. No, but I think there is an element here. I appreciate your effusive praise, Dunk, and I think it's merited. But if you're the BC Lions, and I think this is the way this organization views things, because they have gotten better every single year, and they've tried to challenge themselves. And if you see this, you can't just view it as an absolute 100% success. You can pat yourself on the shoulder. You can say, we did a great job here. But if we're not holding them for the whole game, are there tweaks we can make to our game day experience to engage people for longer, to keep the casual fan in longer, right? We've talked about in the past the need to make it a party atmosphere, and stadiums like TD Place in Ottawa do a really good job of that. BC Place isn't really built for that same type of atmosphere, and I think objectively, and these are not tailored towards me, I'm in the press box, I'm working, but some of the in-game engagements come across a little bit flat. Some of the bells and whistles, especially the new ones this year, got to be a little bit irritating. And I don't know if they completely reached those fans. So tremendous success getting them in the building, but maybe you approach some of those other things around the game day experience and say, well, if we can tweak this here or do this there, then we'll have 40,000 by the end next year, right? We can build this crowd to stay and to last. And I think the BC Lions will do that because they've proven themselves to be that type of organization under Amar Doman, that they're not going to be just satisfied by getting 50,000 people into the building, that they will take that and learn it and use it as a lesson to get better going forward.
Exactly. He wants to shine until his heart stops. That's what I'm saying.
I'm really interested to see what the attendance will be like in week four when this.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Team hosts the Edmonton Elks, because in 2022, the first year of the concert kickoff series, they had 34,000 people in the building game one, game two, 14,000. A massive, massive loss from the first game to the second game, over 60%. Last year, week one, they had 33,000 people in the building. That fell to 20,000, their next home game in week four. So still a drop off, but only about 40%. Now they've set a way higher bar, almost 54,000 people. So if week four, they have 20,000 people in the building again, like they did for their second home game last year, to me, this becomes a little bit more of a fail. If they have 25, or dare I say 30, even 35,000 people in the building, then this should correct any negativity that anybody has brought to this, because obviously that is not just a one-off concert followed by a bunch of thin crowds. This is a concert that has really generated positive momentum and got people coming into the building. I will also say, and we can move on in a moment, one thing that rubs me the wrong way is some of the discourse, and I don't want to say it's just older fans, because I don't think that's true. I think younger fans can be this way as well. is they want the CFL to grow, but they don't want it to change at all or try anything new. They want it to be the exact same it's always been and just have people suddenly like it more. And that is ridiculous. We get a little bit of that here at Three Down Nation too sometimes, where people will be like, well, you guys just write these flashy headlines. And it's like, yeah, we actually do try to title our articles interesting things, because, you know, if it's not interesting, by definition, it's boring. And it's like, well, but no, we need more CFL. And then people will say, but we need more CFL coverage, not less CFL coverage. It's like, well, this is our coverage. And it's like, no, it has to be boring. No, don't stop writing interesting articles. It needs to be boring. It needs to be bland. But we need a lot more. And it's like, I'm sorry, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't have something be the same and be covered in a boring way, but also simultaneously growing and with way more media attention, especially at a time when media across this country is shrinking at an alarming rate. So kudos to the Lions for trying something new. I'm very excited for what their attendance will look like again in week four when they host the Elks, because I think that will show what type of trajectory they're on in terms of not just having a big one-off concert, but seeing if that can have positive lasting effects like we saw last year, right? With a far smaller drop-off from game one to game two.
Hodge, though, you do love having your cake and eating it too.
I do.
Literally.
I do love having my cake and eating it too, 100%.
Dunk, we at Three Down Nation awarded Bo Levi Mitchell with Offensive Player of the Week, with Montreal Alouettes running back Walter Fletcher receiving the honorable mention in week two. Do you feel like Trevor Harris and or Keon Schaefer Baker got ripped off?
There's a case to be made for those guys. I understand the consensus wanting to go with Bo Levi Mitchell, but if Marcus Sales and DeMarcus Fields didn't blow a couple coverages, would Bo Levi Mitchell have had the game that he had? If the CJ Revis call, I know it was by the letter of the law, didn't go the other way and actually give the Ticats back the ball after a fumble had been caused and he was on the ground without all his helmet on. And if you're a player without your helmet on, you're not supposed to participate in the play. And then all of a sudden there's a reverse flea flicker down the field to Keandre Smith. The next play, Shamar Bridges is in the end zone. Are we talking about Bo Levi Mitchell as the Offensive Player of the Week? That's obviously the way the game played out. But I'm just saying, I felt like, you know, Trevor Harris and even arguably Keon Schaefer Baker had a much more tangible game that maybe wasn't filled with some luck in it because of the bus in the secondary for the Riders. But you know what I think this speaks to is the offenses, to some degree, having a really nice start to the season around the CFL. You know, usually at the start of the season, we're talking about teams kind of struggling and defenses being ahead. That's not been the case, at least from my perspective, looking at the league as a whole through 2 weeks.
I agree. The offenses have been ripping it up, which is really exciting. I personally was in favor of Mitchell at one, Fletcher at two. However, there were a lot more candidates for Offensive Player of the Week, really good candidates, than we saw for most weeks last season, because Keon Schaefer Baker did have an excellent game. I will say, since you threw in the caveat for Bo Levi Mitchell, Dunk, a lot of Trevor Harris's production, not just week two, but week one as well, in their comeback win over Edmonton, has come later in the game when the defense is just worried about, you know, not having the top taken off of them, and they're giving up everything underneath. That Saskatchewan offense has been good through 2 weeks, but they need to learn how to score some points in the first three quarters. Right now they've scored 12 points combined in the first three quarters of their first two games. That's not sustainable. You're not always going to have the amazing fourth quarter comeback. It's great when you do, right? You get the dub. You everybody's excited. I'm not saying they don't deserve to be 2-0. They do. But they need to score points in a more sustainable way, and that means moving the football a little bit better and punching it in for points during the first three quarters of the game. And also getting AJ Ouellette involved more often. His production along the ground has been very disappointing through two games so far.
He has been involved, though. Leads the league with 29 carries. And the production needs to be better.
Sorry, that's a better way to say it. The production needs to be better. I do think they're doing a nice job of getting him involved as a pass blocker where he's very good, as a receiver out of the backfield where he's very good. But that offensive line has not done a good enough job opening lanes for him. And it's going to get tougher with Phillip Blake looking to be out with a long-term injury, unfortunately, after he was helped off the field this past week. So I thought Mitchell deserved one. I thought Fletcher deserved two, but I appreciate the question. I think that, you know, again, in a lot of weeks, Harris with, I believe it was 390 passing yards, he'd be the unquestioned number one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also side with Mitchell this week. I appreciate Dunk playing the if, and, or but game here about those busts in the Rider secondary that allowed so much yardage for Bo Levi Mitchell. But if I can perhaps play the flip side of that same coin, where would Bo Levi Mitchell's yardage total be if Tim White could catch a damn football? Right? Like, he drops one in the
end
zone.
Don't tell that to Tim White, though.
He's getting a little sensitive out there on X or Twitter or whatever it may be. But hey, look,
receiver, catch the football. If you don't catch the football, then people are going to question you. That's how pro sports are, my man. I don't think Tim White understands this, especially if you want to be one of the highest paid receivers in the league.
Yeah, They didn't give him the full $300,000 that he wanted this offseason. Maybe they should have, because apparently it was that last $50,000 that was actually paying him to catch the football. The rest was just pocket change. So if they'd paid the full amount, maybe he's hauling those in. But he made a couple of huge mistakes in that game. And if he hadn't have done that, those throws were on point. Bo Levi Mitchell would have had even more yardage than he did. He wouldn't have had an interception, and he probably would have had another touchdown as well. And that makes his game even more impressive.
Titans probably would have won.
Yes. Yeah, they absolutely would have.
Or at least had
a better
chance, I should say.
Right? Even if he makes one of those catches, right? If Tim White makes one of those catches, I think the Hamilton Tiger Cats win that football game. And that is how close their margin of victory has been the last couple weeks. And that's because of the play of Bo Levi Mitchell. And it should be noted, like, we've been critical of him on this podcast before, myself especially. You know, I've encouraged teams to move on from Bo Levi Mitchell in the past. But it seems like at this stage, he has found the fountain of youth. Now, one game, it's an anomaly. I wasn't, you know, beating this drum after his performance in Calgary because I thought emotions may have played into it. Maybe that creates a one-off. Well, now there's been two games like that. To me, that's a trend. If he comes out again in his third game and has another performance of this nature, I think we can truly say Bo Levi Mitchell might be back. And that's a testament to his offseason work.
You know, what bothers me sometimes about some professional athletes, not all of them, and Tim White, by the way, from a hard money standpoint, $210,000, the sixth highest paid receiver in the league in 2024. Last year led the league in receiving yards, has been an all-star, I think, 2 years in a row. Want to be the man, and like JC said, ask for quarterback-type money in the CFL, you need to be able to handle the other side of it. And I understand that there might be some feelings that go on behind the scenes that you have to deal with as a professional athlete. But to take to social media and post like he did, to me, shows an immaturity. And we're just talking about Tim White in this respect. But I have an immense amount of respect for a lot of the professional athletes that I've been around in a bunch of different leagues. The majority of those obviously have come in the Canadian Football League, who understand that if you do not perform, and not even if you just do not perform, but in Tim White's case, if you do not perform to now what you have set as your expectation, which is great as a CFL All-Star, that there's going to be criticism. And not only did you not perform to your level, you were well below it, and you essentially, for all intents and purposes, handed the Rough Riders a victory. So yes, Tim White, there is going to be criticism. We will praise you on 3downnation.com and the podcast and all our socials when you do well. But when you literally pop the football up into the air with less than a minute left and give the Riders a win in your home opener, there is going to be criticism not only from the media, but the harshest critics are going to come from those Steel Town fans. I can guarantee it. So deal with it. Get used to it. Come back. Use it as fuel and play better. But I'm sick of hearing this kind of stuff. You're a pro athlete. You want to be paid this type of money. This is part of the deal.
Well, and if you're ever going to get some grace from the local fans, and by the way, the Tiger Cats faithful are not full of grace on the best of days. They are a tough, tough. And I have deep respect and admiration for how much they love their football team. But they are not the most forgiving group. And I think Tiger Cats fans would admit and acknowledge that. You ask any player in the CFL, where do you hate playing the most? To a person, they will almost exclusively say Tim Hortons Field, because those fans will give it to you. And they give it to their own players sometimes. But if you were going to get grace from players, from fans as a player, one way to do it would be to take a bit of a hometown discount on your contract or sign back early. Do players have to do that? Of course not. I would never criticize a player for trying to maximize their value. But the way that Tim White went about it during free agency, I think rubbed fans the wrong way. And that is the backlash that you are going to get if you say quite publicly, hey, I'm worth $300,000. And if y'all want me for that money, you're going to have to come pay me that money and make you people wait. Because he didn't sign for a number of days of free agency. A lot of Ticats fans, I know we all got questions on social media from Ticats fans feeling anxious. Hey, what's going on with Tim White? Why isn't Tim White signed back? So if you put fans through that anxiety, they're not going to forget about it come June, especially. And by the way, it wasn't just the last minute interception that was on Tim White. He had a touchdown pass in his hands on, I believe it was Hamilton's first drive of the game, and he dropped it. So he took points off the board right at the start, and then he coughed up the game losing turnover in the last minute. And that was after he dropped like a 47-yard bomb down the sidelines that probably would have gone for a touchdown in Calgary. Like, this team could legitimately be 2-0 if Tim White had just caught the damn ball in both games, as JC said so eloquently. So yeah, to me, the Tim White criticism, I think, is warranted. Will he get out of it? I think Bull Levi Mitchell was correct in his assessment when he was talking to the media. Yeah, he'll probably snap out of it, but obviously not the start to the season that Tim White was anticipating or that he was hoping for.
I think Tim White can learn from Bull Levi Mitchell. After both games, tough losses, he definitely wanted to win in Calgary and obviously wanted to win at home and wants to win every time he goes out there. He didn't make excuses. He got asked about the drops. He said essentially that he needs to play better and that the, you know, losses is still on him. He didn't point any fingers. And I think this would have come off much differently on social media if Tim White posted on X and said, sorry to disappoint you, Ticats fans, I'll be better next game. Something very simple instead of the way that he phrased it. So, you know, talk to that veteran quarterback. Bull Levi Mitchell has been in this league for a long time, obviously is media savvy, knows how to navigate these situations. And I think it's really easy. You know, at the best of times, Mama used to say, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. So if you're going to kind of put it on the fans a little bit after you took them through the anxiety of a potential win in their home opener to a gut-wrenching loss by causing that turnover, then at least have some self-awareness, okay? That's all that I ask here, especially when you're wanting that kind of money in free agency. Time to make our picks for week 3 in the Canadian Football League. You boys went 2-2 against the spread last week, so, you know, we're trying to get over this mediocre stage that you have to start the season. Anything to say for yourselves, boys?
I mean, I was going to go 4-0. And the Ticats threw their game away. Like, I was in great position. I was feeling, and same thing with the Elks. The Elks were gonna, or pardon me, same thing with the Lions Stamps game. The Stamps were gonna cover, and then they literally, like, it was an 8.5 point spread. BC kick. I anyway, I was so I halfway through the week I was 2-0. I was so happy, and then I got oh so sad.
The heartbreak is real, Hodge. The heartbreak is real.
The Montreal Alouettes are 6.5-point favorites over the Ottawa Redblacks on Thursday night when the Owls finally hoist the 110th Grey Cup banner after starting the season with back-to-back games on the road. The Redblacks looked pretty sharp in last week's win over Winnipeg, Ottawa's first game of the season, though Montreal's defense has allowed only 32 points during this 2-0 start. JC, who you got?
We really didn't get a chance to talk about it off the top, but I was really impressed by the Redblacks in their first game last week. Drew Brown looked sharp in his first start at quarterback for that franchise. And I think Rykel Armstead is a real find at running back. He seemed to really give that offense something they've been lacking, a physical element in that run game. But this is a different animal this week. This is the Montreal defense. And since about halfway through last season, they've been unbeatable. And I don't think that's going to change on a night where they're going to host the Grey Cup banner that they so rightfully earned last season. Montreal is going to be fired up. And that Ottawa crew is going to have to go through a little bit of a learning curve here in order to figure out one of the best units in the entire league with all the new personnel they have. I still think this spread is a little bit wide, but I'm going to take the Montreal Alouettes here all the way.
I'm certainly going to take the Alouettes to win this game. I think this will be a low-scoring, grind-it-out, pound-and-ground type of game. That being said, I am going to pick the Ottawa Redblacks to cover here. I do think it'll be close. I do think the Redblacks are much improved. I think that Drew Brown, with his quick decision-making, and a surprising, I didn't realize that Justin Hardy had quite as much yards after the catch ability as he showed in week two against Winnipeg. I thought some of those timing routes were really effective. I do think that they could recreate some of that success here at Molson Stadium in Montreal. So I'm going to take the Alouettes to win this game, but I do think the Alouettes have it in them to cover in what, again, I anticipate to be a relatively low-scoring affair.
The only critique I have of the Redblacks after seeing them in those new uniforms is the fact that there's nothing on the pants. There needs to be something on the pants, man. Those jerseys, those helmets. Oh, man, that is swaggy, drippy. Those pants, you know, they're probably not going to be able to change them in season, but if they add something to that, right up there with the top uniforms in the league. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers are short home favorites against the BC Lions on Friday night, where the Blue and Gold are under pressure, to get win number one this season. The Bombers have suffered key injuries, especially along the defensive line, while Zach Collaros hasn't looked very sharp under center so far this season, throwing no touchdown passes and 3 interceptions. Meanwhile, the BC Lions are coming off their first win of the 2024 season, beating the Stamps with a new-look offensive line that allowed 0 sacks. Hodge, can the Blue Bombers win and cover?
You fool me once, shame on you. You fool me twice, shame on me. I cannot pick the Bombers and have them lose again. I have to take the BC Lions.
This is the bounce-back spot, though.
I know. And I do expect the Bombers to bounce back. I don't think that they should be pressing the panic button. And I do think that Zach Collaros will be better, because someone who has been that good for that long does not just wake up one day and forget how to lead an offense. However, I have to take the BC Lions in this one. Winnipeg's injury situation, as of the recording of this, by the way, it's Wednesday morning. We don't know exactly who will or won't play. For an update, check out 3downnation.com. But with clearly a lot of this team's stars either being unavailable or not being 100%, I just cannot in good faith take them to win. Can they prove me wrong? Absolutely. But I have to roll with the BC Lions here. I think Vernon Adams has done a great job of maximizing his receivers. I think Travis Fulham has had a bit of a disappointing start to the year, but Justin McInnes has been sensational. Alexander Hollins has been very good. And this defense has been tough. So I am going to take BC to come into Princess Auto Stadium especially as underdogs. I did not expect the BC Lions to be even a short underdog here. The fact that Winnipeg is getting a point or two is a surprise to me, so I'm happy to get those couple of points and roll with the Leos.
I think these are two teams that have fatal flaws right now, and either of them could cost them a game, but to me it comes down to quarterback play. And I know you both were banging that Zach Collaros drum for MOP all of last season. You thought he should have got that three-peat. But all of last year, I was banging a different drum, the Vernon Adams Jr. drum, and I'm still banging it. I think right now he is playing at the highest level of any quarterback in the league. And for half of last season and for this season as well, he has been better than Zach Collaros. I'm going to bet on that trend and that trajectory here and say VA is going to compensate for his team's faults far more than Zach Collaros is going to compensate for his. And the Lions are going to go into hostile territory and come out with a big victory just as they did last year in week three.
The Toronto Argonauts are coming off a bye to host the Edmonton Elks on Saturday, where the Argos are 5.5-point favorites at BMO Field. The Argonauts upset the BC Lions in week one and are 6-0 coming off the bye since 2022, while the Elks suffered another collapse against the Alouettes as McLeod Bethel-Thompson threw another fourth-quarter interception, looks a complete opposite of a Ferrari. JC, can the Argos win another one and force Edmonton to an 0-3 start under Chris Jones?
Of course they can. This Toronto Argonauts team is as talented as any we've seen in the league. Now, their question marks were at quarterback. How was Cameron Dukes going to look when he was the guy? And in week one, he looked fantastic. Can he keep that up? I don't know. But it's against the Edmonton Elks, and if there's a defense in the league that's going to give you opportunities to make plays, it's Chris Jones's defense. I'm going with the Argos all the way, and frankly, I don't think this spread is wide enough. I know the Elks' first couple games have been super tight, but I think this is the one where it gets away from them, and that stone starts to roll down the hill towards the Week 5 bye when Chris Jones's job could be on the line.
Yeah, I'm taking out my knife and fork here, and I'm chomping away these 5.5 points here for the Toronto Argonauts. They're coming off a bye. They've been very good off the bye the last couple of seasons. If this team was going to lose early in the season at home, it would have been week one to a tough BC Lions team. They not only beat the Lions, but quite badly outplayed the Lions in that one. I see this being a victory for the Toronto Argonauts. I don't see it being particularly close. I'm very excited to see Jake Ceresna go up against his former team. My over-under for sacks is going to be about 1.5. Though Curley Gittens Jr., who is the other half of that trade, has been very good for the first couple of games of the season for Edmonton. The thing that I will harp on the Elks for is actually the same thing that I would harp on the Bombers for, what they should have done late in their game in week two, is get the backup quarterback involved. Trey Ford sitting on the bench for 60 minutes is an unbelievable waste of resources. I'm not saying McLeod Bethel-Thompson's been bad. He's made a lot of really good throws to start this season, but especially in, you know, second and short, in red zone situations, Trey Ford is the best athlete that the Edmonton Elks have. He should be on the field. The same is true for Chris Trevler in Winnipeg. I think that absolutely the Elks, if you're going to save your season, because you might have to do that right now because you're going to BC on a short week in week four, that's going to be an unbelievably tough game. You got to win this one. Get Trey Ford involved. Not saying to start, but get him involved. I don't think they're going to, though, and I think they're going to fall to 0-3.
You know what's a waste of resources? Spending around $500,000 on a quarterback when you already have one on the roster, when you're talking about an offensive line that isn't very good and might cause a quarterback to need to move around a little bit. Just saying. The other thing that stands out to me about this game is Ryan Didwitty's expectation that he has laid out to this Argos football team since he's gotten to Toronto is that they go undefeated at home. Or they at least scratch and fight and claw to defend that home turf, so to speak. He said it in his comments after the victory against the BC Lions in week one that didn't really mean anything to him because they just expect to win at home. He's like, we got to go on the road and win a damn game in Vancouver to be doing anything of substance to Dinwiddie. So that standard to me is absolutely high. And I just have a hard time seeing off a bye week the Argos coming out flat at home when there are those kinds of expectations from the head coach. The Saskatchewan Roughriders are 2.5-point favorites against the Hamilton Tiger Cats on Sunday for the second half of a home-and-home set between the two teams. The Riders erased a 10-point fourth-quarter deficit at Tim Hortons Field in Week 2 to win on a Brett Lawther field goal, while Kean Schaefer-Baker caught two touchdown passes from Trevor Harris. On the other side, Bo Levi Mitchell off to a hot start, but we'll need Tim White to drop fewer passes or none at all, moving forward to give this team a better chance to win. Hodge, can the Ticats pull off the upset at Mosaic Stadium?
Here's my qualm. Last week, I said I think these teams are going to split the home and home, so I was taking Hamilton to win at home, and then I would take Saskatchewan to win at home. The problem is, though they outplayed the Riders, in my opinion, the Ticats did not win at home last week. And so for that reason, I am going to roll with them here in enemy territory, especially getting some points on the road. Yes, Mosaic Stadium is a tough place to play, but with the defensive breakdowns in the secondary from Saskatchewan, which I thought were very concerning, the inability to get AJ Ouellette running the ball, I think is a huge issue. And then you've got Ryan Skeevier coming in at guard to replace Phillip Blake, which I think is a downgrade. So I am going to take the Ticats here. The Ticats, again, arguably should be 2-0 right now, though they are, of course, winless. So I said these teams are going to split the home and home. I'm rolling with that. I'm taking the Tabbies with the points.
Full credit to the Saskatchewan Roughriders. They're 2-0. They're at the top of the West Division right now. Everything's rosy in Regina. But this wouldn't be the CFL unless we got Riderville just a little bit fired up, just a little bit nervous. So I think this is the week when all of the problems that we've seen in those first two tight victories come to manifest, come home to roost. Those discipline issues are going to manifest at home. And I think the Riders drop this one like they should have dropped the one last week to the Ticats, but in a much worse situation for them in their home stadium.
The Riders flat out need to be better at home than they've been the last two seasons. 4-5, a losing record in 2023. 3-6, a losing record in 2022. And Corey Mace has talked about it with this team. He comes from being with Ryan Dinwiddie for a number of seasons in Toronto. That expectation of winning at home and having a winning record. And I think this is a prime opportunity, the first two games for the Riders, where they can learn from those mistakes, correct some of that discipline and these silly penalties they've been taking, you know, in and around and after the whistle, and get a win at home. I think AJ Ouellette is a guy that's going to run possessed because he is disappointed with his lack of production through the first 2 weeks. And there's just something about this Riders team that they didn't flinch those first couple weeks in the fourth quarter. Yes, they were down, and there are definitely some issues for this team to correct, but that mentality to me is one that has the potential to be a consistent winner and of championship quality. We'll see it this week because back-to-backs in the CFL are historically difficult to go 2-0 against the other team. But I really do think the home crowd is going to be on the side of the Riders. Mace Mania is running wild throughout that province, fellas. He's on billboards all over the place. People love this guy. But you got to win at home when the Rider fans are there.
It's now time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 2004, Don Loney passed away at the age of 80. The Ottawa native was a four-time East Division All-Star center with the Argonauts and Rough Riders before embarking on a successful coaching career. Loney served as the head coach at St. FX University for 17 years, from 1957 to 1973, during which he compiled a record of 133, 31, and 2. The team went undefeated for an eight-year span, during which they were dubbed the Assassins of the Antigonish, which is maybe the best nickname ever. Loney was a pivotal figure in the development of U Sports football on the East Coast, helping create the Atlantic Bowl, which has since been replaced by the UTEC Bowl, and the Canadian College Bowl, which is now known, of course, as the Vanier Cup. In 2013, Loney was inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. JC, we'll start with you. What does the legacy of Don Loney mean to you?
Well, it means everything for football in the Maritimes. I mean, the Loney Bowl championship, the AUS conference championship, is named in his honor for good reason. You look at that resume, 8 years undefeated within his own region. That is huge. And that nickname, Hodge, if I could go off on a little bit of a tangent here, we need more nicknames like that in sports. Why are people not coming up with brilliance like the Assassins of Antigonish? You want to get more people interested in Canadian football? Come up with some dope nicknames like that.
When you're named after a championship trophy, that about says all you need to know about somebody's impact on a given sport, and in this case, Mr. Loney. I would imagine for a long time that AUS championship is going to be called the Loney Bowl, and rightfully so for what he did on the East Coast. We need more people in our country as passionate about football as Mr. Loney. Time for the 3-minute drill. Hodge, Darian Durant told you he regrets not accepting a pay cut following the 2016 season to return to Saskatchewan and play for the Riders. Do you believe him?
Yes, I do. And I think that after, you know, taking a few years to kind of learn and grow, maybe do a little bit of maturing and kind of have a better retrospective, we'll call it a 2020 look at his career in hindsight, I do believe that Durant fully regrets not taking the pay cut to stay and finish his career in Ryderville. Obviously, Ron Lancaster will forever be the quarterback of the Saskatchewan Roughriders, but I think Darian Durant is a pretty amazing second, and I think his legacy is still intact, right? He's now involved with the broadcast with CKRM, and you know, he's making two trips out to Saskatchewan, not just one. He's going to the Plaza of Honor this year, but I think his legacy would be all the better if he had stayed and finished his career in Ryderville. Chase Brown and Ja'Marr Chase of the Cincinnati Bengals visited the Montreal Canadiens facility this past week, JC. What brought them there?
Well, they were out in the Lachine, Quebec area for an NFL Flag Regional Championship, promoting that event as a couple of NFL players. It was cool to see them get out there on the ice with Paul Byron, the director of player development there for the Montreal Canadiens, get some customized jerseys and do a little Canadian food taste test. I guess Chase Brown was showing off all his favorites to Ja'Marr Chase there in his visit back to his home and native land. Longtime CFL player and special teams standout Brian Crawford has been named the commissioner of the Ontario Hockey League. Is that a great job for Crawford?
It's another step up with this guy. Started with the OUA after his playing career, went to, I think it's Basketball Canada or Canada Basketball, one of the two, and then was a tournament director for the RBC Canadian Open and created a tournament that just recently finished, which had the most ever fans attended in the tournament's history. So clearly knows what he's doing on the business side of sports. This is a smart hire for the OHL. The Ottawa Redblacks officially placed Jeremiah Masoli on the team's 6-game injured list. Do you think we'll see him play at some point this season?
Here's a hot take. Yes, Jeremiah Masoli will play at some point this season. It will not be as a member of the Ottawa Redblacks. That's my hot take.
Ooh.
That's my prediction.
For Drake, who, though?
Depends on who gets hurt. But somebody's going to get hurt. And I see a trade happening. That's just that's
we don't
my
want
opinion.
To cheer for injuries. Don't
oh,
be
no,
like
I'm not cheering for an injury. I'm saying my prediction is that an injury will inevitably occur and Jeremiah Masoli will be shipped to whichever team experiences a long-term injury. Football Canada has hired former CFL VP Kevin McDonald as their new executive director. Is that a good fit?
I think it's a fantastic hire. Kevin McDonald was already involved with the organization in an interim role. This just makes it official. But that organization needs somebody to usher it into the new era of football in the Olympics, flag football in the Olympics, and all that entails, become more of a business, more of a national sport organization like all the other major sports in our country. I think it's an important transition, and there's nobody with that type of experience in sport available like Kevin McDonald. I think it's a fantastic fit for him to come back into the football space. Corey Mace admitted his team has penalty problems, as the Riders have committed more penalties for more yardage than any other team in the CFL. Do you think the Rough Riders can get it fixed?
I do, but Corey Mace is going to have to get even more harsh on the players here. He said some of the rotations were affected, so that was playing time. And then he said casually, I don't think too many people caught this, that you can't just take money away from players. So perhaps there was some fines there, but 18 penalties for 199 yards in the first couple weeks just can't happen. Now, I do think part of it is the Riders with this new aggressive approach under Mace, where he wants to play to the echo of the whistle. But I think the players at this point need to learn to play to the whistle to avoid some of these flags, like a Christian Albright hip tossing. I think it was Felix Garon Gauthier in the Ticats game. That kind of stuff has to be cut out, or at some point it's going to cost the team in the win-loss column. Hall of Fame quarterback Ricky Ray will be added to the all-time Argonauts list. Is he worthy of that induction?
He very much is. My only qualm with this, why is it called the all-time Argos list? Like, some teams have a Hall of Fame, some teams have a plaza, some teams have a Ring of Honor. Why is it a list? Could it not be something a little bit punchier? Is there a copywriter available who could just be a branding, but like a list? It's a list. Really? A list? It doesn't make sense to me. Make it something more interesting. Come on. The Montreal Alouettes added former Calgary Stampeders strong side linebacker Titus Wall. Is that a prudent signing?
I think it's a brilliant move by the Alouettes. We all know that they've lost Reggie Stubblefield for what appears to be the entire season. He's one of the best young Sam linebackers in the league. Bryce Cosby, who they've got playing that role for him right now, looks to be a find as well. But if he goes down, gets nicked up, Titus Wall is a guy who's proven he can play that position at a reasonably high level, who's done it for the last couple seasons in Calgary. I think that's a great move for a defense that is one of the best in the league, if not the best, and will continue to be going forward. After a big first week, the CFL posted lackluster TV ratings on TSN in week two. Should the league be worried, Dunk?
No, I don't really think so, because the two games that really dragged these ratings down went directly up against the Edmonton Oilers being in the Stanley Cup, as the Oilers are trying to make this crazy comeback after being 3-0 down. And I think that's the main issue why the ratings were down for the Thursday night matchup, Winnipeg at Ottawa, and Saturday, Calgary at BC. I expect them to bounce back, and full kudos to the league for actually getting week one correct in terms of having a 22% jump. So we're just putting the facts out there. But the other two games, you know, are pretty good. Montreal at Edmonton, over 681 average viewers total between TSN and RDS. The RDS rating, 282,000. Very impressive for just the French language. And then Saskatchewan at Hamilton, over 538,000. So I don't think the league has to worry at all about the TV ratings. And, you know, speaking about programs and interesting things to watch, fellas, just before we go, by the time you listen to this podcast, you can go out and get the Andrew Harris documentary, Running Back Relentless, on Apple TV, Amazon Prime, Google Play, your main live stream video providers, let's call them. It's one that I was heavily involved in. But you know, I think for as much hate as there is out there, fellas, for Andrew Harris and the issue surrounding performance-enhancing drugs, that when you watch this documentary, and I believe you two have both seen it as well, you get to understand Andrew as a person and the life and the things that were going on behind the scenes for him growing up and even into and throughout his professional career. That was one of the things that really stuck out to me while doing this documentary with Andrew, is that he was open and honest about a lot of the issues that he had going on, which is something that's really rare from a professional athlete.
We thank you as always for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. We'll see you next week for our next episode.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.